this episode, I'm talking to Dr. Max Jamily, CEO and co-founder of Hoxton Farms, based out of the UK. Hoxton Farms is producing cultivated fats in their London-based facility and are awaiting regulatory approval in several jurisdictions, and are part of the Sandbox scheme funded by the FSA in the UK, aiming to bring cultivated proteins to the shelves within 2 years. They've raised substantial investments to help them reach commercial production. I'm Alex Crisp. Welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews, available on all podcast providers and on Substack. So please subscribe for free and comment. Thank you, Max Jamily, CEO and co-founder of Hoxton Farms, a UK-based cultivated meat company based in Shoreditch in East London. So, Max, could you just quickly just sort of introduce yourself and perhaps sort of tell us about your journey to Hoxton Farms?
Hey, Alex, it's great to be here. My name's Dr. Max Jamily. As you said, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Hoxton Farms. And in sunny East London, we grow cultivated fat, which we sell as an ingredient B2B to the food industry. My background is in cell biology. So I've spent most of my career growing cells. And it's more recently since Hoxton Farms that I've had the privilege of eating them as well. I studied in Cambridge, UK. Then I worked in Cambridge, US. Then came back to Oxford, UK to do a PhD in drug discovery. Really, though, I was working out what makes stem cells grow and how to grow them at larger scales, which, of course, translated really nicely into the technology we use at Hoxton Farms. During the second half of my PhD, I spent some time working in venture capital, investing in biotech startups like Hoxton Farms. I worked briefly in another future food company. And then back in 2020, at the height of the pandemic, my co-founder Ed and I started Hoxton Farms.
Okay, so you have a background in venture capital. I suppose that was that because you did a very successful fundraise of 22 million, which must have impacted your company's growth quite a lot. I mean, so was that quite difficult to raise that sort of money to get started, or? I mean, that was last year, was it? Or was that the year before?
We've raised about $35 million to date, starting with our seed round of $3.5 million USD back in 2021, and then a Series A of $22 million in 2022. So that was already a few years ago now. Raising money never comes easy, and so it shouldn't. We have really careful, considered, and expert investors who took the time to understand Hoxton Farms really well. But I'd also think that what meant we've been able to do that, and what gives me confidence for our future fundraising too, because we'll need more money, is the technology that we've built, the business model that we have, and the progress we've made so far. And of course, from a career perspective, understanding venture capital and having a network in VC too has really helped us along.
So you say you will need more money. That 22 million must sort of keep you going for a while though, right?
Yeah, quite right. And we're very careful about how we spend it. We are now a team of 50 people, and we're producing at significant pilot scales here in London, but we've been able to do that in a much more capex efficient way than some of our other friends in the industry who came before us. We've been lucky to learn from them about how to do things best, and also we've learned from our own insight into how to address these core problems of cost and scale in the cultivated meat industry. Making fat, which is a very scalable and high impact, low inclusion ingredient, also helps us be very careful with our cash. So We're in a good position there, but scaling up and building CapEx intensive infrastructure needs that capital part. So to reach our full potential, we will continue to fundraise over time for sure.
Right. Okay. So what is the sort of mission or goal of Hoxton Farms? What would you say is your company mission?
We're becoming the world's biggest supplier of healthy fats as an ingredient. Hoxton fats will change the way we eat. They will make meat and meat alternatives, soups and sauces, bakery, and many other verticals in food besides healthier, more delicious, and much more future-proof and scalable as well. That's our mission. We are growing to build the biggest manufacturing operation of cultivated fat anywhere in the world. And we want that to be in meals, center of plate, every single day, in every corner of the globe. It's going to be an exciting journey.
Okay, yes, for sure. So, you want to be the world's biggest. You have some competition, I suppose, don't you? I off the top of my head, there's sort of Meatly and Most Meat that also produce animal fats. So you'll be so what do you have that kind of separates you from the competition?
This is a friendly industry, and I view our competitors as much as collaborators. We're still at the stage where we need to prove whether cultivated meat can make a difference at all. And in that sense, a rising tide lifts all boats. So we're all in it to prove this together. The meat industry, which is where Hoxton Farms competes, is a $1.3 trillion industry. That means there's plenty for all of us. However, we do have technology and a business model that sets us apart from other companies in the industry, Alex. When it comes to our technology, we have this incredible combination of cell biology, hardware, and machine learning that ties it all together. When it comes to our business model, we're intensely focused on being B2B, which means a much faster and more capital efficient route to market. And when it comes to the product itself, we make fat, which is the most delicious thing in the world and healthy too. So that's what sets us apart. Although, of course, I'd love to talk about those in more detail if you like.
Well, yes. I mean, I was. It's an interesting choice that I suppose lots of people. The first wave, I suppose, of cultivated meat companies of products is the fat-based product rather than the meat-based product. I mean, can you just explain why you've chosen to have fat as a product rather than meat?
That's the best. Fat sizzles and smells and tastes amazing. And talk to any chef from Michelin 3 stars to the home cook. They know that fat is the most important part of meat and many other recipes besides. So it's just such an important part of what we eat that it really made sense to us as the place to start. Been another way. As I said before, with a small amount of fat, you can make a really big difference to the finished product. Of course, as we scale up and as the cost comes down, we need to work to achieve cost parity. On the route down that journey, what we care about is the cost in use, the impact of the cost of our ingredient on the total cost of the finished product that our B2B customer manufactures. And if with a small amount of fat, you can make a massive difference, then that cost in use may be lower. So a little goes a very long way. And
Okay.
then the final point here is technical feasibility. It's much easier to build fat than it is to build muscle. This is an unfortunate truth that we know as human beings. It's easier to grow fat than it is to go to the gym. And the same is more or less true inside our bioreactors as well. Fat cells are very easy to grow, which makes the technology more scalable.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, and I suppose, you don't need such things as scaffold or these things, do you, when you are scaling up? So that makes the process a little bit easier, doesn't it? And also, I suppose it's kind of it's an easier thing for consumers maybe to sort of deal with, because the kind of mouthfeel of meat in lots for cultivated meat might be harder to achieve than perhaps the fat that can then be added as an ingredient to plant-based foods or something, which would have the sort of mouthfeel. Is that is it's that's it's
You're
it.
quite right. The one of the hardest things to achieve with any kind of cell culture is structure. That's what scaffolds may help with when it comes to making muscle. And in the case of fat, you don't need those scaffolds because the structure is easier to achieve. Depending on the format, whether it's a whole cut or a soup, the fat might get used very differently, but you're quite right. What consumers are looking for, fat evokes for them is often mouthfeel or cooking performance rather than a specific structure. So structure is less of a challenge for the product that we're trying to make, and that eliminates structure as a technical challenge from our production process as well, fortunately.
Okay, so can you explain a little bit how you are planning to sell your products into the market? I mean, are you working on collaborations with companies already have all their processes and systems in place, or are you going to be just sort of selling it as an ingredient?
We're a B2B ingredients company. So we sell our cultivated fat, Hoxton fat, to food manufacturers making CPG food products who have existing products and existing manufacturing processes into which Hoxton fat is a drop-in replacement. So we are specialized in everything from the beginning of the cells to the finished Hoxton fat. And then we hand the fat over to our customers who turn it into the B2C finished product that goes to the end consumer. We're working already very closely with those customers to understand exactly what they need, help our fat's nutrition and performance meet their requirements to make the very best products. And then, of course, what we give them in return is not just the fat, but an understanding of how to work and formulate at large scales in manufacturing processes to make a finished product. So we're already working hand in hand with these customers all over the world to do co-development. And as we get closer to commercial scales and market approval, that means we will be ready to provide them with large amounts of fat. They'll have the recipe and the production process ready too. Then we're off to the races.
Okay, yeah. So you talk about when you have regulatory approval. This is obviously this is a hurdle, a bit of a barrier. But I mean, I know Hoxton Farms has joined some big names with as part of the sandbox with the FSA recently. So what does the future look regulatory wise? I know they said they gave a time of 2 years before we'll probably see cultivated meats on the shelves in the UK. So how is it helping being part of the sandbox, and how is that experience so far, and how do you foresee the regulation unwinding in the UK?
The sandbox news is hot off the press and it's fantastic news indeed. So the new government has appointed some specific funding to the Food Standards Agency to create this cell cultured product sandbox, which is a program for six companies from all over the world, not just the UK, to work closely with the FSA and build a transparent and effective and safe regulatory pathway for approving cultivated meat. And that, of course, includes cultivated fat. And the sandbox includes Hoxton Farms. We were so delighted last week that it was finally announced that we're part of that program. It is an opportunity for us to work alongside the other best cultivated meat companies in the world, share all of our learnings, share the details of our processes, and help the UK government become the fastest, most effective, and safest regulator for products like ours. As you said, we're planning as part of the sandbox on seeing at least a couple of products approved in the United Kingdom in 2027, which is remarkably soon. Had you asked me a year ago when we could have reasonably expected approvals in the United Kingdom, I would have said, and I should be specific, I mean England here, I would have said, I just don't know. And now we have a much better idea. And that certainty alone is worth its weight in gold. But certainty of such quick approvals, because 2 years really is rather quick, is fantastic. It puts England significantly ahead of Europe and several other regulators around the world. Now, Cox and Farms is a company here in London, and the UK market matters to us enormously, but it's not our only market. We're also working with regulators in several other countries so that we can bring our products to market there too. These are some of the usual suspects, like Singapore, the US, and a few other Asian countries besides. Regulation is a necessary and really important part of getting a product like ours to market and winning over consumer confidence. And the UK is a great example, but in all these other countries too, we're working very collaboratively with the regulators. And I'm optimistic about our pathway towards regulatory approval. And it's worth mentioning that just a few days before this great announcement of the cell culture product sandbox in England, so too did the FDA in the US announce the approval of Mission Barnes's cultivated pork fat. That was the first FDA approval for pork cells and the first approval for a fat product. So really good news, de-risking regulatory approval in the US for products like ours as well. And of course, huge congratulations to Mission Barnes for achieving that.
But also, I mean, there's the, I mean, are you at all worried about the kind of changes with the FDA in the US with their GRAS status being potentially removed? Is that going to affect you at all?
We're keeping a very close eye on what's happening across the Atlantic. Uncertainty is never a good thing, although sometimes change can lead to improvement. The apparent alteration to the GRAS rules doesn't directly affect us, Alex, because we're following the cell culture pathway rather than GRAS. But it does indicate a shakeup in the FDA, which we kind of knew was happening already. And so we are going to have to see where that leads. We're still confident that the FDA is one of the most expert and experienced regulators, well, in the world, full stop, but specifically for cultivated meat as well. And so, although a lot of our commercial focus looks east to Asia right now, the US is still an important part of our regulatory and commercial strategy too. Our chief scientific officer, Vitor, was the leader of one of the first ever efforts to get cell-cultivated chicken involved, approved in the US when he was working at Good Meat. And so we're lucky to have a huge amount of kind of organizational experience working with the FDA, working with regulators in general, which is always a fun adventure, even when politics doesn't get into the mix. But you're right, there's a little bit of political excitement going on in the States right now too.
So how have you found putting together the your regulatory dossiers for these various different regions? I suppose once you've done one, it's kind of quite easy to adapt it for other jurisdictions, would you say so?
It gets easier the more you write them, but each jurisdiction is a separate piece of work. Each jurisdiction has its own approach to the important safety points and to analyzing the data. And of course, each jurisdiction has its own public health priorities too. So we need to adapt to addressing those. We are preparing to file in several key jurisdictions, more or less all at once later this year. And for the most part, we can use data from the same production runs for each of those jurisdictions. I mean, it's the same production process after all. But we do need to analyze it in different ways, and run separate conversations with each of these regulators, which is a really important part of the process because it lets us learn individually what each of them needs. And the more of them we work with, the better we get. So, like with all cultivated meat companies, this is definitely a learning process. We are literally seeing the goalposts change before our eyes as we move towards the goal, but it's getting better and better over time. The regulators, for the most part, are really communicative, so they help us help them, which means giving us guidance about how to write these dossiers. And now we have not just Invita, our CSO, but also Joe, who leads our regulatory work, and many other people on the team besides, just a huge amount of expertise and care that we can put into writing these dossiers very well. So they're big pieces of work, but
Yes.
we're getting pretty good at it.
Yeah, well, when we when Mosa Meat made public how much time and money they spent on their dossier, it was quite extraordinary. I mean, I'm not sure if yours is anything like that, but I mean, they said kind of 10 years of work, 22 people working full time. So it's a big job. So have you made any applications yet, or would these be your first applications which you're making later in the year?
They'll be our first applications later this year.
Okay.
We've been picking the right time to apply. That firstly means applying as soon as we're ready. And as I just said, this does take a bunch of work, and that means a little bit of cost too, although nothing compared to Mosa, because Europe really is a different beast. But picking the right time also means applying when your process is ready for commercial. After all, the point where you submit is the point where you substantially freeze your process and can't change it much more until you actually get approval and take that process to market. Which means you want to wait until you have a process that really is scalable, really makes a high quality product, and at the right unit economics before you actually submit to the regulators. This is a balance because, wait too long and then you have to delay even further your go to market, but apply too soon and you may have a harder time getting approval in the first place. But if your processes are mature, then when it gets approved, it might not be commercially viable anyway. Now, you can update your process after submitting to the regulators, but the more updates, the longer the process takes. So we have waited until our process is really rather good, and that means making stunningly delicious and healthy cultivated Hoxton fat, but also at very impressive unit economics and scalability. And of course, hats off to our R&D and production teams for getting us there.
Yeah. So in September 23, you opened your 14,000 square feet pilot facility in Shoreditch. Why did you choose Shoreditch to open that facility? And I suppose, I mean, has that happened the right way round, do you think, that you have the production facility before you have the right to produce, I suppose, or that you have the regulatory approval to produce? Do you think, I mean, obviously it was a strategic reason. So would you just explain a little bit why Shoreditch and why that way round?
Yeah, perhaps I'll answer the second question first. So, why build production capacity before you have approval or have a market? The reason is that our long-term strategy is to own the production process. We think that's an important part to making the best product, capturing the most value, and working in the most efficient way with our customers. We build our own production technology. It's very CapEx efficient and very scalable with low risk. And nobody else has these bioreactors. So if we were going to run our process in them, then we were going to have to build them ourselves. Now, getting approval requires data from the production process. So it was necessary for us to build that production facility, albeit at a very kind of CapEx lean pilot scale, so that we could run the process and generate the data and file with the regulators. But this isn't just about the regulators, it's about producing the product in our facility to do all this wonderful work with our customers. And it's about running the process so that we can generate more data, build more models, and make the process and the product even better over time. So that's why we chose to build this pilot facility. It was a very careful strategic choice rather than, say, working with contractors like CDMOs to outsource production instead. But another way, those CDMOs just about exist now, but barely. And back then, they didn't exist at all. So we made this decision following the Series A to build this wonderful pilot facility where I am now. And now, why Shoreditch? Well, I'm a Londoner, perhaps I'm biased, but I think Shoreditch is one of the best places in the world. To be more specific, we really care about growing cells in the city. We think London is where people live, where people eat. It's where our food supply should come from, not some greenfield site in the countryside. This was the perfect place for us to build our proof of concept facility. Being here in London is also a wonderful place to work. And everything that we do depends on the incredible technical and commercial and operational talent that we've built in our team. And it makes it just that much easier to attract people when we have a wonderful site in a great part of the city. And lastly, it takes a family to build a interdisciplinary company like Cultivated Meat. So it's not just about the people at Hoxton Farms, the Hoxton farmers, but the other stakeholders like investors, regulators, and customers that we work with. And they are just that much closer to us when we're slap bang here in the middle of London.
Yeah, I mean it is a great place to have your location, isn't it? It's very convenient. So what sort of how much products can you produce in your facility at the moment? You know, what's the capacity?
So in our pilot facility, we're approaching hundreds of liters of cell culture volume, aiming to hit 500 liters at the middle of this year. And that's all in our own proprietary ultra scale-out modular bioreactors. With that, we're already making kilograms of product per month and expecting to make significantly more over time.
Okay. So you expect to be producing obviously when you get permission in 2027 and your product will be on the shelves. Will it be I mean how have I don't know how if you've thought about this, but when your product is in when your ingredient is in a product produced by a food manufacturer, will it be labeled as cultivated fat on the labeling? How is that going to be shown to consumers? How will consumers know that it is sort of cultivated fat in that product?
We think about labeling all the time and together with our customers. Back of pack and front of pack labeling aren't just our decisions, they're also decisions for the regulators. So this will be decided in time as we get approval, and it might vary country by country. But looking at what we see has happened already, for example, in the US, it's labeled as cell cultivated chicken, and similar wording in other countries like Singapore. So it's reasonable to expect that back of pack in the ingredients list, it will say cell cultivated pork fat. Now, the rest of the labeling and the consumer messaging around it, something that we're still working on. And again, it will be application and customer specific. It's really important to me not to take consumer acceptance for granted. We need to understand really well how consumers see the kind of thing that we make. Now, I know that initially, Hoxton fat will drive consumer purchasing decisions. It'll be the reason that somebody picks up product powered by Hoxton fat, not something else off the shelf in the supermarket. So it's really important to us to get that messaging right. and to do that together with our customers. An important corollary there is that we're not selling to vegans and vegetarians. We are selling to meat eaters. And in many cases, that might mean selling to traditional meat companies who combine our cultivated fat with meat products. And what that means is we're likely to avoid vegan and vegetarian labeling, even if you could argue till the cows come home, no pun intended, whether our product is or isn't vegan or vegetarian. The target market here is flexitarians, aka meat eaters, and they're not looking for vegan or vegetarian products. In many cases, they're looking away from them because vegan and vegetarian signals compromise. So, putting aside these technical questions about what we will label the ingredient as, we will avoid front of pack labeling that shouts vegan or vegetarian, unless our customers want it, in which case we provide them with the ingredient and we make awesome things together that they want.
I mean, there was, I suppose, the plant-based foods, there was, there were big promises about plant-based foods a few years ago, which lots of companies and lots of consumer organizations and media have said that they haven't lived up to. So I suppose being able to produce animal fats that could then be merged with these plant-based foods so that it tastes meaty is the ideal combination, right? It provides that taste and that sizzle that perhaps those plant-based burgers and sausages needed. So even though you're not aiming at vegetarians and vegans, there will be obviously there will be a market there, won't there?
Well, of course, and we're already working with some fantastic customers to address that market. Exactly what meat alternatives need is better health, simpler labels, and a much, much better taste. And that's what Hoxton fat can bring. But the important point is that's not the only application. We're working with meat companies, we're working with companies doing bakery, soups and sauces, maybe even markets outside food. Hoxton fat is this incredibly versatile ingredient, and you can do with it all of the things that you do with traditional fat, just even better.
Okay, so I mean, there are. I've spoken to other companies where they are saying that their ambition is to provide 5% of the meat for big meat companies that are already kind of producing meat for sausages and burgers and that sort of thing. So they will just kind of feed in 5% of the meat will be cultivated, but then the rest of it is kind of animal farm. So obviously that's for meat eaters. And is that the sort of thing, I suppose, that you'd be looking at? You'll be providing just a little bit of extra to take the burden off of the industrial farms and that sort of thing.
What meat manufacturers who buy traditional meat as ingredients for their process want is something healthy and delicious, i.e., something that appeals to consumers, and something future-proof and scalable, i.e., something that allows them to build a reliable and economically sound supply chain. And lastly, they want something that lets them avoid tariffs and taxes and penalties as much as possible. So we sell our ingredient to manufacturers who can use it to build those consumer value props and who will benefit from all of those manufacturer value propositions too. That definitely includes meat companies, and it definitely means we can build a world where meat companies are combining Hoxton fat with the more traditional supply streams from the animal agriculture industry as well. This is not an either or. It doesn't need to be. That's not the world we're trying to create. It's a both and, where the more that we scale cultivated fat, the more that Hoxton fat becomes a part of all of those companies' supply chains. And it becomes the most important part, the part that makes their products healthy and scalable and delicious. But we're not trying to replace the traditional lean pork that they buy from some suppliers, nor are we trying fully to replace all of the traditional pork fat or other species of fat that they buy from those suppliers. We're trying to be another incredibly functional and reliable part of the things that they build right now and things that they're going to build in the future, powered by Hoxton fat that we haven't even imagined yet.
It's clearly a very exciting time, isn't it? I mean, one final question, Max, is the future of it's it seems to me that the future of alternative proteins and kind of cultivated proteins and precision fermentation had a pretty bad year in 2024 in regard to investments, and that it was the worst year yet, apparently, since the start. But 2025, for some reason, I get the sense that it might be on the way up. Do you get that sense? I mean, do you see 2025 as the beginning of the recovery?
Alex, we are cultivating a deliciously fatty future, and the sun is shining in Shoreditch. So I am fully inclined to optimism today, as most days. You are right. This industry has had to come to terms with some technical and commercial realities over the last couple of years as it's grown from pipe dream to reality. But that is an important growth stage that all industries go through. We are certainly seeing a bunch of investor interest returning to the cultivated meat industry. And maybe even more importantly, we're seeing commercial and technical milestones that incontrovertibly show that this industry is getting closer and closer to market and closer to making the incredible difference to the way everybody eats that gets us all up every morning and makes us so motivated to work on these wonderful problems. So yes, I'm optimistic, that is at least partly rational, and I'm rationally optimistic because I'm seeing things get better and better, and things are going great for Hoxton Farms. So those are all reasons to feel like 2025 can be the best year yet.
Okay, well, let's hope so, Max. I have high hopes for it. So, thank you very much, Max, for joining me on Future of Foods interviews. It's been a fascinating interview, and I'm sure we'll bump into each other at some point in the next year or two again. So, thank you very much again.
It was a pleasure. I'll see you in Shoreditch, Alec. Thanks very much.